It's time for Cutting Edge Consciousness with Freeman Michaels and Barnett Bain. Thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with my co-host.
Barnett Bain. Hey, how are you doing? We practiced that before the show, folks. This is a full disclosure. We're an authentic program.
Good morning. How are you doing?
How are you doing?
Which part of me?
That's a good question.
which mind? I've got two minds about that.
Well, we spoke a little bit on the drive over in the car. Suddenly realized that I am so rarely in my body.
Yeah. There you go.
A little pause. That's always good for radio. I'm so rarely in my body that it's the new frontier.
And, well, here's the irony or the paradox is that, you know, talking was an adaptive strategy for me as a kid. It was. And so
I think for many of us, talking was certainly for mental guys like you and
well,
I.
Here's
talking
the challenge.
And thinking became a refuge from having to deal with the slings and arrows of being in the body. But it is time to incarnate.
Well, this is my whole
I'm not doing reincarnation.
So look,
I try to do it for the first time.
I recognize that I found radio as an expression of this aspect of me that, you know, I was very accustomed to. Talking, that's good. I like to talk. I learned to talk. I'm a talker, right?
No kidding.
But now as I'm growing into more and more in my life, a sense of being more in my beingness, the talking can be a bit of a distraction.
Well, this lack of clarity about who we really are and, you know, this being run by parts of ourselves that are so adaptive. In the case of you and I, we become radio people so that we can talk, and not so much have to be available to what's going on when we're really in the skin.
Yeah.
And that's almost a reasonable segue. It's almost an effective transition. But
that.
It's good enough.
No. There's more to it.
See if you can go the last mile.
I will. So, no, listen, adaptive patterns that we learn to survive, conditioning, ideas that we've bought into about what our lives should look like.
Oh, that's good.
You've
got your nose to the trail.
That's what I'm talking about.
That's what we're talking about here. Well, we have a guest with us who has been exploring the same issues. He's certainly had his nose to the trail.
He's a winner. He won the game. He won the competition.
He won the competition and then he realized something even more important. I think of him as in film Argo, he's an escape artist. This guy is Steve McQueen over the fence. He's Dustin
nice.
Hoffman of
nice.
Papillon.
That's
he's an
great.
Escape artist, and that is what inspires me personally about him and about anyone who understands the cultural conditioning and what it takes to break free. So we are talking, I say of course, because...
Of course.
That's what people say when they do these kinds of intros. I'm talking, of course, about Tom Shadyac, who we have with us. A little bit about Tom. Tom is a one-time actor and comedian, and at one time he was the youngest writer to work for Bob Hope. He's very well known as a director and writer of movies like Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, The Nutty Professor, Liar, Liar, Patch Adams, Chuck and Larry.
Some one or two huge hits.
I've never had even a tiny hit. So
yes,
right now I'm shriveling. Yes. we are so pleased to have him here. We're going to talk a little bit about life changes, about being an escape artist.
About the movie I Am.
We'll talk a little bit about the movie I Am. I'm sure he's all talked out about the movie I Am, but we'll talk about it, and it's a good starting point to get into the discussion about what it is to be an escape artist. Tom, are you with us, my friend?
Yes, but I almost want to let this comedy scene play out. You guys are. A director knows that when to stay in the background, and you guys are you're fascinating.
That's either a good thing or a bad thing.
I don't know
if
you're talking
with.
To a director or a therapist. But
The language, the adaptive language, et cetera, has been really fascinating. But it's a pleasure to be here, and we'll talk about. I want to know what you mean by escape artist. I'm really interested to hear that. What exactly do you mean when you say Tom Chediak is an escape artist?
Well, here's a guy. Don't you like to be referred to in the third person? Here's a guy who has, by every reckoning of the culture, has grasped the top rung of every measure of success, and had an experience of had. I'm having a little tech problem here. What's going on with my... We all right? All right. I'm not getting any phones back. There we go. Had some kind of a life experience that caused you to reassess all of it and to gain some astonishing clarity about the nature of cultural values versus individual values, and you blasted off from the conventional planet Earth, and you are now orbiting the planet.
How are you up there, Tom?
No, I don't want to suggest that you are not in touch. You are more grounded than ever, and at the same time, more lofty. I say that not in the best sense of the word than ever, more awake than ever.
There you go. That's the language.
Well, I appreciate that description. Sometimes I think spirit just floats, and that's why when you hear the NPRs, they're all talking like this. And I think we need to be here of the earth and on the earth, because spirit wants to walk. So, yeah, that's why Merton said life exists in the belly of a paradox. It's this paradox of when you get in touch with spirit, you actually walk with a passion in life, and I hope that this speaks to the course, that the path that I'm on. But, you know, when you originally said escape artist, I thought you were going to say what many people say about people in film, is that we help people to escape from reality. We send them into movie theaters.
On the contrary.
Yeah, I agree with you. That's how I look at it, is we're putting them back in touch with reality. When you laugh, when you're provoked into an emotion, you have an experience. I believe that is shucking the unreality that our society has created, and you are putting back on reality, the cloak of reality as it exists. So I just wanted to make sure that's what we were talking about.
You know, it's interesting, Tom, because I was at one time an actor, and I had a moment and a half as a soap star and so forth. And one of the things I used to say is that acting for me felt more real than my quote-unquote real life, because I there was a certain amount of permission in the characters I would play that would access and express aspects of me that I didn't necessarily know what to do with in my sort of everyday life.
Yeah. Well, you know, look, all theater and all drama is an access point to the human conversation. So I think that's what you were experiencing. It is an access point to have a dialogue about who we are. So I find it essential and sacred. And even though I'm on an evolving path, I have certainly not left storytelling. I think it is beautiful, and I'm blessed to have been a part of it, and I hope to continue to be a part of it.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the story you tell with I Am, because that, in fact, is a story. It's a, let's call it a new story. It juxtaposes the old story, if you will, with this emerging story of what is possible.
Yeah, it's actually an old story. You were right. It's an old, ancient story. It's nothing I say in I Am is new, except that science and religion, if you will, spirituality, are now merging as one. You know, the ancients, the mystics, the saints, and sages have said for millennia that this idea that love is a force, that everything is connected, that we are all brothers and sisters, all these ideas that we have believed were simply that, ideas, and not pragmatic. Science is now saying quite the opposite, that it's very real, that we're discovering it in the lab, that we now have the human genome study that takes all of mankind's DNA and puts us at the same origin in sub-Saharan Africa with the same two parents, so we really are brothers and sisters. And so the scientists are now confirming what the mystics and sages have intuited for, again, millennia. And it's why Einstein, our leading scientist, said that these moral leaders were actually geniuses in the art of living. Because when, you know, in the film I get in a conversation with my father who says it's great to have all these moral ideas, but they're just ideas. They don't walk in the world. It's Pollyanna. And what we're discovering and what Einstein, I think, concluded was that, no, it's actually the opposite. Morality is actually how things work. So it just suggests a whole different way of being.
Well, this is why I felt that the segment with your father was the most profoundly beautiful segment of the movie. Mm-hmm. He spoke from his most authentic feeling place.
Yeah.
This is a man whose spirit is in love with the dirt of being alive. Mm. He is fully in his shoes. Mm. Not to say that the others were not. They absolutely were. But this is, your father spoke from the trenches.
Yeah.
And it is a powerful, powerful modeling of what compassion is, it wasn't a description of compassion, it wasn't an attempt to calibrate the frequency of compassion, it was a modeling of compassion.
Yeah, well, this is what to me is indicative of how powerful the illusion is, the hypnotic state that we're all under, because my father did build a life based on compassionate act. He helped to found the leading pediatric cancer research institute in the world, St. Jude Children's Research Hospital, which treats kids with cancer for free. So it is the ultimate modeling of compassion. It was the love story of his life. And yet, at the same time, the hypnotic effect is so real, he didn't think we could create a world like that. He did not think that that could be modeled, that other people could, embodying those principles of love and kindness and compassion on Sunday, walk those principles on Monday.
Yes, that was the most powerful paradox of the film.
And I love that you left it in. I mean, I love that it was in there.
Well, to me, what was so honest about it is that it is the central challenge of our time.
That is, absolutely.
Yeah, it is the central challenge of our time. But I think when you examine it, the power of the old way, if you will, begins to fall away. My father said that what he did was a lawyer, but who he was St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. So he actually did it. My father was a lawyer, and I would use his own life as testimony against him in a court of law, because he would want to build a case and say, no, people won't do this. And I would say, well, there's a guy who did it. Oh, it's actually you. You did it. So when we look at what makes a life full of meaning and purpose and joy, that thing we call happiness, which is not just the smile but also engaging in the sorrow and the dirt and the sadness, as you said, it is a life that is always about service, using whatever gifts you have, whatever talent you have, to serve others. We don't find at the end of that journey, that money, stuff, power, prestige, position makes people happy. I just did another film. I produced another film about happiness, and
Rocco's film.
Yeah, Rocco Bellic's film.
Yeah.
And the interesting thing they found, you think of all the occupations that we might think, who is the happiest? What is the happiest occupation? It is a surprising occupation. It is hospice nurses who sit and help dying patients transition. And you would think, oh my God, I don't want to be around death. Oh, that's so, it's so dark and bleak. But yet these people who are serving at this very, very pivotal moment on someone's journey into the next are the happiest people reported occupation that we have, which inverts what we've been taught. We've been taught, no, watch TV, get the car, get the house, get the thing, become the power position.
Get the commercial break in.
I think he's taking a nod from our producer. We're going to take a quick break. When we get back, we're going to talk a little bit more about all of these things. So stay with us here on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Freeman Michaels here with my co-host, Barnett Bang. We're talking today to Tom Shadyac, who, of course, is the director, producer of the movie I Am, along with a whole litany of blockbuster films, including Ace Ventura, Pet Detective, Liar, Liar, and many others. Barnett, before we went to break, I know that there was something on your mind.
Tom, you were talking about your passion for stories, and I am curious about how you are reframing your relationship to story making.
My process is always going to be the same, which is to find the soul of the piece, to find what it is that makes me so passionate, willing to dedicate a year of my life to telling a story. But my business process is all different. So I simply don't call myself the most valuable anymore. Which
Stepping away from that, because we certainly know where you're operating from vis-a-vis where you've been. I'm not so interested in where you've been as much as I am where you're going in the same sense that your father spoke of, vis-a-vis his the poignancy of his, as big as his heart was, his capacity to dream a world wherein people could operate from these other motives was a little bit brittle. And you are very committed to storytelling. Muriel Rukeyser once said that the world is not made of atoms, it's made of stories. And so there is a particular approach you have to unpacking stories with a view to modeling what kind of empowerment?
Well, I'd say this, that the most powerful story a person can ever tell is the one they'll tell with their lives. So I am not just going to focus on what stories I put up on the screen. I'm most interested in what story I'm telling with my life. So I want to be the very model that I hope to see in the world.
There you go.
So that's going to be reflected in my business dealings and in the stories I tell. It's that simple.
Do you share the same perspective as your dad? Or I sense that you are much more optimistic, and that as a model of a new story, you have faith in the model, or we wouldn't be here.
Yeah, and I don't even call it optimistic. I call it realistic. I think I am as the
That's
ultimate
great.
Reality show. All I want to know is what is real. And if it's actually real that getting a lot of stuff makes you happier, I would be pitching that right now. But I believe through my experience and looking at the historical figures I so admire and current figures that the more you give, the more you receive.
Wow,
so I want to be as giving and as connected to other people and helping to fill those needs and name my own. And that's where I think you'll at the end of your life you'll say, wow, what a journey.
And there's a foundational piece for this which you spoke of earlier, and I want to go back to when you were speaking about what the Human Genome Project ultimately revealed. Initially, for folks who aren't aware of what that process looked like, scientists believed that there were going to be hundreds of thousands of genes when they started to map the human genome. What they found was there was a few tens of thousands of genes, and in fact, other organisms that we view as maybe even lower than us had many of the same genes, if not most of the same genes, as their makeup. And so we moved from a paradigm where we saw ourselves as separate to where we see ourselves intricately aligned and actually substantially, it's the same stuff, if you will, that makes anything that we see around us, which is it's a paradigm shift.
Yeah, you know, we don't necessarily even need the DNA, which is beautiful to see that our DNA is related to, you know, not just, you know, our ape ancestors, but even the life that's coming out of the ocean. But if you think about it, we know that life began 13 billion years ago with this infinitesimally small point of energy in the universe that we call the Big Bang Theory. Guess where you come from? You come from that. So you have the same makeup. There are carbons. There are various chemicals and properties that are in everything in the universe. So you look at the table, you share. The table that you lean on now, you share some properties because you come from, everything is created from that one infinitesimally small point of light or energy from which we all come. 4 billion years ago, it was the Earth. We all come from the same single cell life ancestry. We all have it.
We did a show a few weeks ago here. We were talking about Mark Twain's last novel, incomplete, called The Mysterious Stranger. You may know it.
Carry on.
It's a mind blower. Here's the basic premise of it. He says the dream marks are all present. You should have recognized them earlier. His contention is that we are becoming more and more lucid to the fact that this is a dream state.
Yeah.
Generated out of our belief and values and our thoughts and our choices and our decisions and in our attitudes. As we become closer and more intimate with those, they become less structured, and the underlying connectivity of things begins to show through. How do you feel about that?
Well, it's interesting. The mystics have said the same for so long, that what is essential and real is the thing that actually makes you you. You said, how are you, earlier. You guys started talking about how are you. I just put the emphasis somewhere else. How are you? Like, how are you? How are you even talking to me? How are your body animating? No scientist can explain it. This is what I believe is what is real. So that's why the mystics called it, what we're doing now, sort of a dream state. Because it's all temporal, it's all finite, it's going to come to an end, but who you are, the essence of who you are, is going to exist eternally. You are from some divine creative source, you are returning to that divine creative source. So that informs a complete freedom in how we walk here. You can walk with courage, because you know that when you face a fear, you can kill the dream. But you, the dreamer, but you can't kill the dream. You can't
Beautiful.
Kill that eternal spark.
And I love what the movie illustrated as well, the I Am movie, about the level of responsibility for something other than words and action. And it spoke in terms of the energetic quality. I'm thinking, of course, of the study you did at HeartMath,
right?
Where really what's being expressed just in a thought, if you will, just in a sensation, and how that reverberates out and has an effect on everything around you.
And we know that intuitively.
We know.
You're speaking of a study where my emotional state, when it changed, it affected a living system yogurt in front of me, and it was measurable. So when I got sad, the yogurt registered my sadness. And we know that. When we come home in a bad mood, we don't have to say a word to our spouse or friend. Immediately they pick it up. Our animals pick it up. If we're in a fearful or angry state, our animal picks it up. You remember that when we were growing up, they said if you talk to your plants, and they had studies where those plants would be more robust in their growth patterns. So it's stuff we've all known, and now science is beginning to measure it and quantify it. And this is why I think it's essential, because our technologies have gotten so extreme now. If our morality does not catch up, this is what Martin Luther King's summation of his journey was. If our morality does not catch up to our technology, we are a doomed species. So I think we're at that place now. We can even see it with that Kony video, which friends of mine have made. They're using technology now with a moral purpose behind it, because technology is neutral. It can be used to set off a car bomb, or it can be used to connect people. And I believe now we're placing a value behind that technology. We have that opportunity, which can change everything. And that value is, of course, love and connection.
And what I like about that, and my take though on the piece of what you're generating and how you're perceiving it is a level of personal ownership, which I feel was illustrated in the movie as well, where we actually track back to what am I generating in my own experience. It empowers people to have a much more profound effect. I think one of the trip cords, and Barnett and I have spoken about this in the past, is there's a tendency to point out there, to say, you know, I want to save the world out there. And the reality is that the work we do inside is going to have a much more profound effect on the world outside of us than any slogan we may want to, you know, plaster to our bumper. Or
who we are being.
That's right. We go back to sort of the beginning.
If there was a way to pass a collection plate now, I would pass the collection plate. Because mm-hmm. so many of us want to change things on the outside, and all true revolution comes from the death of something on the inside of us and the rebirth and a reawakening on the inside of us.
A new dream.
Nothing changes until I do.
Exactly
so
right.
Dramatically, so dramatically presented in that clip of you at HeartMath with Roland.
Yeah.
What it can stimulate in people is the question: well, if I have this kind of impact remotely, what is the range of impact that I have? What is the range of subtle frequencies of communications that I am a to use a metaphor, that I am broadcasting all the time.
That's it.
What is my impact all of the time?
There is no range. It's limitless.
It's limitless, precisely. But
the butterfly effect.
It is the butterfly. Well, even that is kind of tucked into a sort of if-then logical thing. It is such a ill. It so blows open logic and reason. It so unpacks a whole different way to begin to be. To sense a humility of vis-a-vis our relationship to all that is. Lynn McTaggart speaks about it in your movie as the field. We are simultaneously in the field and the field.
Yes,
right.
You wanted to say something earlier, Freeman. You were on a roll about brothers keepers.
Oh, well, this is your line. I was thinking about, you know, Barnett often says, you know, we move from a paradigm of, you know, I'm not my brother's keepers, to where we say, no, wait, I am my brother's keeper, to where we move even to where, wait a minute, I am my brother. I mean, this, again, on a quantum level, we start to recognize the connection between all things. And again, from a personal ownership standpoint, and we've said this before on this show, when we really begin to realize what's showing up in our experience is a reflection of, at the very least in the way we perceive it, of us. Right? That we actually begin to recognize that, wait a minute, there's a filtering process where my worldview, if you will, the word often is schema, is being expressed in how I'm seeing things and what's appearing and what I'm generating. And that level of personal ownership at first is overwhelming, but at some point it becomes empowering.
Well, I've learned to allow the greater thought to rise up, so there's no reason other than to say, well said.
Bless you. That's very kind.
Well said. I know that makes for a bad radio guest, but when you say it,
we'll loop it,
or better than anyone, I will allow that to settle in.
Good. Well, the other piece, if we're going to start to become increasingly responsible for our inner states, including our emotional states, including what our values are, and then what's indicated is a new relationship with celebration. And I know, because we have a great many friends in common, I know, and because we surf the same spots, I know that you make a point of reveling in your world every day, being out in the water and living out in that gorgeous park.
Yeah, well, the great mystic poet Hafiz, and also Rumi, they summed up the walk as to dance. They want us to dance. They believe that whatever is animating through us wants us to celebrate and experience life in all of its many facets. That even means to experience pain, mm-hmm. but that it is a dance. It's this cosmic dance that Thomas Merton says exists in your very blood, whether you want it to or not. So we are invited to forget ourselves on perfect, those selfish agendas, and join in this dance. And so it's really, you know, the gospel when I grew up was called good news, but yet it said half the people in the world were going to hell. I didn't find that very good news.
Yeah,
I find this really good news, that we are creators along with the great creative force, that we are a part of that force, and that force is about life. And celebration and dancing.
And we're co-creators, and when you speak about these developmental states, either individually or culturally, where, you know, there are good guys and bad guys, and if you play by the rules, you get stuff, and if you don't play by the rules, you go to hell. To be able to have arms broad enough, wide enough, and shoulders broad enough to even love that was a development expression of my own journey. I think out of that, I begin to understand what turn the other cheek meant. I begin to understand what love your enemies was.
Yeah.
It just means it's developmental. You're just firing on a few more cylinders than yesterday.
Yes, it's all opportunity. If you look at everything as all opportunity, you know, if this creative force is a storyteller, you know, I come from the storytelling tradition, then we see everything in a different perspective, because what does a great storyteller do to characters that the storyteller loves, that the author loves? You throw obstacles in their way. So you stop seeing those obstacles as separate from yourself, but you welcome them. You begin to say, oh, this is beautiful. This is a chance for me to rethink, to refine. And so you stop seeing obstacles and enemies as enemies. And you do, as the mystic said, love thy enemy in the context of the great story that's being told.
It's beautiful.
So when we develop beyond narratives, not a great thing for box office, granted, but when we develop beyond narratives and beyond, when we begin to recalibrate so that we can tune in ever more into the joy, into the love, into the frequency, this ecstasy that has been the promise of every poet and every mystic that we on whose shoulders we're standing. There is no story in that. It is an emergent story. There is no beginning, middle, and end to that. I mean, I have no idea what that experience of ecstasy could be. Have you given any thought to that?
Well, I think as long as we're in this plane, this dream, as you said, of existence, that story is always going to exist. It just contextualizes the conflict and the adversity. Look, I think Hafiz was the greatest poet, along with Rumi, of that we've been given. He really embodied. He said he wanted to be a hole in the flute that the Christ breath moved through. Listen to this music. So he tells to me as close as the Christ God breath as there is. And he says, what about all this suffering? He says, think of it as being washed. And I myself, Hafiz, am constantly dripping and soaking wet. So he himself was feeling suffering. He was feeling adversity, but he had a context for it.
Yeah.
He knew that this was temporal. He knew that this was about the great story and the great dance. And so he could serve it, and he could feel pain in context because he knew that pain led to his greatest passion. The root words of pain and passion are the same. So we just look at it as pain as something. No, get it away.
Push it away.
Get it away from me. And the mystic knows, I welcome, because I know what hurts me blesses me. And
so any feeling, positive, so-called negative, that is either denied or pushed away or clung to, goes toxic.
It does.
Yeah. I don't even believe necessarily in positive or negative thinking. I believe in truthful thinking.
It's beautiful. It's beautiful. And with that, unfortunately, the truth is we've run out of time. But
that's it. All. But I enjoyed this, man. I appreciate what you guys are saying. It's really beautiful.
Well, we'd love to next time have you in studio. And
next time we'll do it again, and we'll bring a little bit more to the party and set it up so that you can come down here. We'll spend a little bit more time as well. Go left and right and deeper.
Well, that was fun.
Yeah, awesome.
I enjoyed it very much. So all good things, brother. We'll talk soon.
All right, Tom. And for those of you listening, stay tuned, because we'll be right back here on Cutting Edge Consciousness.
Welcome back to Cutting Edge Consciousness, thought-provoking discussions and bold ideas from the edge of possibility.
And we are back on Cutting Edge Consciousness. This is Barnett Bain with my co-host, Freeman Michaels. Freeman, you have been itching to bring something into this conversation, and we've been laughing about it during the break. We promised each other we would go to the Mokin in the Third. for our listeners, what we're referring to, of course, is the third segment of our show. And
what are you referring to?
Pertinent to that incredible conversation that we had with Tom Shadyac, what came to mind to you was a story to do with a tribe, I think, from Indonesia called the Mokin. This was something that I first discovered reading your book.
Mm.
Shameless plug.
Yeah.
Reading Freeman's book.
Yeah. Well, it struck me as well. So the story is this. The Mokin are a tribe. Indeed, they live on islands off the coast of Indonesia. And it's interesting. I first discovered them. It was a 60 Minutes program, actually. After the tsunami, the 60 Minutes had gotten the word that none of the Mokin had died. And, of course, they were in the path of the tsunami. They actually were hit first and technically hit harder on these little islands. So they went with this French anthropologist out to speak with the Mokins, and it was fascinating. I love the part of the interview they thought was going to be like, you know, so how did these guys survive?
This is 60 Minutes?
Yeah, 60
interviewing
minutes.
The Mokins?
Yeah, yeah.
And Mike Wallace?
I don't remember which one of them did it, but anyhow, the crux of it was the big impact was, how come you survived? And the answer was so simplistic. Because we saw the animals go to higher ground, mm-hmm. and so did we. Now, there's also something in their oral tradition about when the sea goes calm and so forth and so on. So they had other indicators. But they were paying attention to their natural environment, which is ultimately what it spoke of. But that wasn't what struck me as so profound. There was a couple things, and very simple things. The interviewer asked through the interpreter how old the guy was. They were talking to this fisherman guy. And the guy's like, I don't know. He doesn't know how old he is because they don't have a word for that. They don't measure time. They don't even have a word for when, which I thought, wow, wait a minute. What's that about? And there were so many threads that sort of blew open, you know, my personal paradigm of how the world works, right? They didn't like possessions because that weighed you down. They're kind of nomadic. They go between these islands, and they build a hut. They leave it. And they make tools. They leave them. And they don't want to carry it because it weighs you down. And there were so many things that that were powerful. But one of the things that was most powerful, the interviewer asked, he said, so the Burmese government has taken, it's a military dictatorship, and has taken over a few of these islands. Are you worried? And the interviewer sat there for a minute and goes, that's another thing they don't have a word for. And I went, wow. Hmm. So what that spoke to in me is that, and this is, I think, a big part of the I Am movie, is that we are sort of socialized and conditioned to believe that competitive is good and so forth and so on, that we're even wired that way, the tale of the Darwinian tale of survival of the fittest and so forth. And what the scientists, there was one specific study was showing that no, in fact, we are far more wired to be cooperative. In terms of wiring, it's just conditioning that we've bought in this idea that we ought to be competitive. And I thought that was powerful. So the two link in this sense, in that, you know, both of them kind of blow open my personal box. Both of them have allowed me more permission to ask myself, what are the qualities in me that I want to generate? And what are the things that I have bought into about, you know, how the world works and what I ought to be doing and even what's possible that I'm no longer that vested in. Mm-hmm. And so this is the point of both of these. I mean, I Am is a beautiful movie that's, I think, for a lot of people, mind-opening. And for me, it's reaffirming of the idea of what we were talking about in the segment, which is, you know, we have the power to dream a different dream.
I remember in my high school algebra days, these equations, they used to be bracketed, remember, in parentheses?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
And
you had two sides and the whole thing.
But
yeah.
There is a world of equation inside of those parens. Mm. And so I see it. I see this story that you're referring to about the Mokin, Tom's movie, I Am, as pushing out the parentheses,
yes.
Pushing out,
that's beautiful.
Expanding the context so that I can reframe how I hold myself vis-a-vis my assumptions about things. And, you know, you and I on this show have referred to humility in a way that maybe is not, it's not commonly used. We've talked about humility as the it is the talent, the gift, the grace, the skill of being able to hold the possibility that even though things have always been one way, in the very, very next instant it can all be different. That means that the parentheses get blown out, and I have the humility to have a sense of awe and wonder and curiosity, and to allow my tightly held convictions and assumptions. You know, we're so tightly wound.
Yeah, no, that's exactly how I experience it too. It's a loosening of the boundaries and the bindings of my conditioning, of my even my perception. You know, you spoke earlier about the developmental stages, and I know we've talked a lot about that, but it's worth noting again and again and again that, you know, look, it's not like you know, before we knew something, the idea that we ought to have known it is preposterous, that it's all developmental. And these points that we get to, and look, it, for Tom, it was an accident, a near-death experience. We, on this show, have had so many people who have had near-death experiences and went, oh, my goodness. I, in that moment, I had this recognition, recognition, that they actually were able to see more completely that the track they were on may not be, the most fulfilling. And they had this new ordering, if you will, of what their priorities were. And their world, as it were, opened up from the bound state, from the constricted state of how we're taught to hold our reality.
How about that?
It's a chirp.
How about that?
Someone forgot to turn off their devices.
Who could that be?
Who's calling?
That's for me.
Oh, that was beautiful.
That's for me.
A little chirp,
I love that.
Little chirp
a little
in the middle
chirping.
Of our...
We're just keeping it real.
You have to pay extra for the chirping sound effects.
Like
you
know to that. Keep it real. Should I take the call?
Yeah, no. We need another guest.
We could probably get... We could probably patch him in.
Oh.
I didn't hear a word you said. No, I'm only kidding. I'm just let me just text and take this call here. So
which is so apropos for how we get distracted.
Well, it is apropos to again this. You know what you're talking about is a maturing, a growth, a seasoning. It's just bringing on more capacity. And, you know, as we kid about the texting, it's not a laughing matter, but it is a developmental stage. It is a developmental aspect of us that's in arrested development when you see it in adults. That is so...
distracted.
So distracted and so narrowly focused that they are able to, listen, I'm not going to say that I've never done that either, that they're able to think that they can drive a car and take a call or drive a car and check an email simultaneously. Doesn't make somebody bad or wrong. It's real easy to get all that scolding energy. But it is a... You push out the ellipses a little bit and begin to realize who we really are in relationship to each other and to everything that is. And it suddenly becomes it becomes unthinkable. Not that it's bad. It just becomes unthinkable that one would do anything other than be focused in with an inspired focus on whatever we're doing,
right? Fully present,
fully present with what fully present with whatever we're doing, and then comes the dawning intelligence.
That's right.
That when we are fully present with what we're doing, things begin to expand and become more and more responsive. And on the other side, when we become less fully present. The world gets dangerous.
It does.
It begins to mirror back a sense of being fragmented and disconnected with the self. Accidents happen. Calamities happen.
No, and this is such a great point. I mean, you know, it's interesting. I'm going to throw in the paradox, if you will, that part of the slowing down and the focusing and the grounding and the centering and becoming present, it opens up a very rich complexity. So the distracted complexity is not complexity at all. It's a fragmenting. And yet, on the other side, the going deeply into something and seeing it very dimensionally, anything, whether it's something in nature or seeing circumstances or watching the world play out in front of us, mm-hmm. with a level of intimacy of all the threads that are being expressed, that is a kind of movement towards, it's a life force energy. There's a dimensionality to it. We've spoken about it. But again, you know, if I sort of tie this whole show together from start to finish, with the very beginning of how are you and having Tom on and watching all these threads of how he came to discover and how we're discovering and uncovering and being discovered by these lives we've chose
to lead.
We are
choice.
So multidimensional and so complex. It's almost as, you know, another metaphor I have for it is a diamond with many facets. Mm. And we get lost in the facet. And it's only when we pull back we see that these are all facets on one jewel. Tom spoke earlier. He said, how are you? And he likes to put the stress on the second syllable, I think. How are you?
Mm.
And that was beautiful. You could put the stress on any of those three words and have three completely different
that's
subtexts
that's
going on.
That's
and
absolutely
our,
right on.
Our opportunity, as we become more and more lit and more conscious, is to become aware
that's it.
Of the subtexts of things and to be the chooser of
that's
them.
That's the choice. It's the chooser piece.
So when somebody says, how are you? I can have a sensing of where they are coming from. To continue the analogy, depending on what their inflection is, but I can also choose how I decide to relate to that by supplying the subtext myself. I can put the stress on any one of those three words and make that real for me.
Yeah, and I want to say then, very simply, going back to the distraction, it's not that I'm never distracted. I just choose not to live my life always being distracted. So that I get distracted, that I multitask, that I hear from parts of myself and I wander down a road that may or may not be that constructive, of course. But my point of choice is the awareness and going, oh, and being able to sort of pull it back a little bit, see the complexity of it, and then navigate that from a greater sense of awareness, which in fact is what that movie is ultimately all about.
Beautifully said. And speaking of awareness, I am aware
that
we have run out of time, have we not? I'm seeing our crack engineers all nodding. And no, now I'm getting stretch it out 30 seconds. So Freeman is going to sing.
Why don't we give us
sing his song.
No, I'm really not. Let's give folks the website. Listen, if you've enjoyed this show, we invite you to send it off to folks. That's in fact how the show is disseminated, though it's on broadcast radio, it also goes out in a viral sense through the internet. So we are really grateful when you share this. We also like to be liked. Please join us on Facebook, and of course, we invite you to keep coming back to Cutting Edge Consciousness. Yeah.
Tom Shady X Movie. I am.
Oh, we highly recommend that.
We highly recommend that. So please, you can look at that at the Tom Shadyac site, www.iam.com, I guess.
I am the movie, I think. It's also available for instant download at Amazon and other places.
TV. You'll find it. Google it. You'll have no problem finding it. You'll have no problem whatsoever. We wish you a fabulous day, and see you next week here on
Cutting Edge Consciousness.